Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this? Welcome to the Gridiron Blitz on Blog Talk Radio. It is Tuesday, the 24th of 2015. Your host here, Oscar Lopez, along with the beautiful Nkechi Free and the man that knows it all in college football, Troy Wilson. We'll be talking NFL. We'll be talking college football. We're going to dive into the Aussie playoffs in Australia, as well as news and notes. And we're basically on to a lot of stuff that happened in the NFL this week, but on Blog Talk Radio and at UltimateSportsTalk.com, you can find us there. So let's dive into this maddening week that I considered of a headache, technically. So let's dive into that. Reminder, our broadcast is sponsored by Zazzle.com. You can go to Zazzle and get cool stuff for Christmas from top brands like Disney and our brand, No Joke Football. Save big all holiday season with the codes daily. So go to Zazzle.com and get some stuff for your family and for your friends for this coming Christmas season. So Nkechi and Mr. Troy Wilson, I don't know where to start at this point, but I'll start with, can we get any more dumber in St. Louis? Let's just go there first, because I want to go there first because I'm so mad. What is up with this guy, this coach? It's just horrible. Troy, tell me, what is up with this? Is he taking too much medicine? He's not thinking straight?
Well, I think in Jeff Fisher's tendency is to play conservative. He's always been a conservative football coach, even in his days in Tennessee. You know, his whole thing was to run the ball, protect the football, and play defense, and you kind of see that there. What's starting I wish I could explain what his thought process is recently, but it just seems like he just continuously makes bad decisions, and he does it in very important positions. But the biggest one, and I think which is making national headlines right now, is leaving Case Keenum in the game after he was hit. Now, to hear his explanation of it is, he said, you know, from his vantage point, the play, everything looked fine. He didn't see Case Keenum stumbling on the ground. However, if, you know, your second string quarterback, if he saw it and he's, you know, putting on his gear and he's putting on his helmet and he's on the sideline, he's warming up, he's throwing the ball around, how did you as the head coach not see that? To hear him say that, you have to start wondering, like, you know, what is going on in his head that he couldn't pick up on that when everyone else in the stadium saw that this guy was not in his right state of mind, and he left him in the game, you know, for the rest of it. And then, of course, at the end of the game, it comes out that he does, that Case Keenum does have a concussion.
I don't understand that. Nkechi, you want to dive into that? How do you leave? I mean, he was so out of it that his own linemen had to try to, like, boost him up, and then he fell down. I mean, you can't tell me that, you know, even the ref. How did the ref miss that? That's the point. How did the ref miss that?
The refs have missed so much that I don't even think that's a question we can ask this NFL season. Because, truthfully, I don't even know what the refs are seeing out there anymore. And the reality is that at some point you have to start questioning the coaches and what they're seeing and their perspective is, you know, in terms of what they're looking at on the field and the types of decisions that they're making. And what I really don't understand is, didn't we just go through this in Washington? So I'm waiting to see, when are people going to start learning the lesson? What is the point of going through all this foolishness in Washington to understand then you have to protect your players, you have to be looking, you have to be paying attention, and that is your job as the head coach, is to protect the players, because ultimately the players are the ones out there on the field, not the coach. And you got to have a product.
The biggest mistake here, I think, is really protocol. They have protocol, and they fail to implement it. So who gets fined here? That's the question I want to know. Do we find the team? Do we find the coaching staff? Or do we some sort of reprimand the ref for not making the right call? Who's the closest person to the player on the field?
Well, you have to keep in mind also the way that it's set up for the NFL, that the NFL has implemented for each one of the teams that they implemented a spotter to pick up on these things. Now, the spotter should have been paying attention. The spotter, what he can do is he can buzz down to the officials and have them stop the game to have a player evaluated either there on the field, and of course they have to take them to the sideline and then go through their battery tests. But that didn't happen either. So on one hand, I understand what the outrage is as far as people saying Jeff Fisher should have done his job, but there is, you know, with the NFL, you have to start looking at them now. The NFL can't find itself, so obviously they're not going to admit fault in this, but it's their implementation, it's their program to have these spotters there for this very reason, and it didn't work. So you have to, at this point, sit back and say, okay, what more can we do to try to protect our players, try to protect all of these players from these head injuries? And the fact of the matter is, it's just almost impossible to do it. Because anytime you have a slip like this, you're going to get, you know, this you know, these bursts of outrage as far as, okay, well, you said this is important. Well, why didn't you stop the game there? So where do you start? Where does it end?
Do you think we've gone too political in this league now?
Yeah.
Between the Players Association and the league, I mean? Between the Players Association and the league, basically?
In my opinion, the point when the NFL knew that it was a billion-dollar company is when the politics started to just get out of whack. You know, it's funny because, I mean, and this has been going on since the beginning of, as far back as I can remember at least, where, you know, they say gambling is illegal. But, you know, what they do is that they have the point spread, and then they put that out on ESPN. But then you come back and say StubHub is illegal gambling. I mean, not, excuse me, not StubHub, but FanDuel and things like that, there's illegal gambling. But the reason why you put that point spread out there is for that very reason. It's so people can gamble. And then also, think about it like this. Why do you think that the NFL has a mandated injury report? It's so so Vegas can put out a proper line depending upon who's going to play and who's not going to play. So it's always this kind of give and take, hey, don't do this. But, you know, it at the end of it, the NFL is doing it to basically protect that shield. And it's just too much behind the scenes things with the NFL. Now, they're never going to stop making money. And that's the big part. That's the big part of it. They make too much money for everyone involved, for anyone to come back and actually pull their card on it. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, the NFL has become completely politicized at this point.
And Kishi,
I'm thinking, and honestly, because I have to agree. I mean. But wait, it's interesting that when you're saying protect the shield, see, when I think of protecting the shield, you know, as a member of a sorority, I think of protecting the organization's honor. I think of the integrity, the meaning of our symbols. And when I say protect it, that means do our best to uphold it and to uplift it. However, when I think of protecting the shield, when it comes to football, I don't think about that. I think it just simply means protect the baseline, protect the bottom line, protect the dollars, and do whatever it takes to ensure that the wheels keep chugging and the machine keeps moving. But I don't think of it in terms of protecting the people for what the organization stands for. And I don't want to say it's too political at this point. I do think, however, there's a lot of pencil pushing and red tape. But the problem is we've got so much red tape and so many rules that they've become ridiculous to sustain, and they oftentimes are without merit or point. And at that point, they're more about protecting the bottom line than the actual product, and the product is the players, and that's where I seem to have a lot of issue with what's happening on the field.
Yeah, and the whole thing I'm trying to, you know, the whole point I'm trying to make right here is, you know, they have all avenues to look at things, and they just seem to still get it wrong. It's just, you know, you have, what, how many cameras on game day? I mean, to see that a player is not up to par to finish a down or something like that. As an example, we have the concussion examples is just an example, but we've had various examples at different levels, you know, whether it be linemen, exhaustion, hydration, whatever the case may be. But my point is this, the NFL Players Association doesn't police its own players. I mean, just take domestic violence as just an example, okay? The organization, to me, in my opinion, the Players Association should be the first one to put a slap or a reprimand or some sort of restraint on a player that goes beyond, you know, some sort of abuse status in what the courts or normal society considers a wrongdoing. Not allow the NFL to get briefed and then to have the NFL go, okay, well, you're worthy of two games, or you're worthy of 2 weeks, or we're, you know, we're going to ban you for a year. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's getting so politically dumb that you get to a state where, as a fan, you're standing there and you're going, you can't make a right call? That's ridiculous. With every resource that you have, you can't make the right call. Am I wrong?
No, you're definitely not wrong. And, you know, watching these games this past weekend, I'm not going to lie. I threw my fair share of items around my home watching, you know, I watched the Redskins-Carolina game. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, exactly what your point is. You let Case Keenum, who had a clear concussion, stay in the game, but then you flip it over. Chris Culliver comes up and makes a football play and forearms Greg Olsen in the chest first. And then, you know, his helmet did hit Olsen's helmet. And then there's a turnover, but you immediately throw the flag and you say it was a blow to the head. And you just completely turn the game over at that point. But then you see other plays where an even more egregious tackle, where you can sit back and say it was helmet-to-helmet contact, and then it's not called. There is no uniformity when it comes to how the games are officiated. Can any of you, and I swear, I will send you guys $100 right now, explain to me, in the NFL terms, what a catch is? I'll wait. Anybody?
I believe you need to call Jeff Fisher, because he says he knows what a catch is.
Right.
Troy, you know that is a dangerous question to ask me, because I am still fuming about last year's catch. So,
and
no.
You should be.
Because,
and you should
because
be.
That was a catch. I mean, in all, because that was stupid. The ball was in his hand. He had control of the ball. He went, and on top of that, his knee was down before the ball came out. So here's a question for you. When is a player down?
Yeah,
when is a player considered down? Forget a catch. When is a player down? So that once his knee is down, so what if the ball comes out because he's down, he had possession, he caught the ball? And can I just say the stupidest rule that I've ever heard in my entire life that I literally abhorred? This is my 2-second rant. I hate the fact that you can have the ball in your hands and you're still holding on to it, even if you may not have a great grip, but you are in the end zone. and that's not considered a touchdown because you don't have possession. But you can hit a pylon, a little foam thing that knocks over, but you can hit it and be on the outside of the line, but and not between the two pylons. Just hit the top of the pylon, and that's considered a touchdown. Do you know how many touchdowns have been overturned because of quote-unquote not having possession of the ball, but you hit a little foam stick that falls over and you give that a touchdown? Like the one last night, even though I was happy to see the Bills get it, that was crazy. Oh, he wasn't technically down because the Patriots player hand was under his knee. I'm slapping my forehead off of this foolishness.
Yeah, and that's why I'm watching the Canadian Football League more closely now.
Much better product. Starting to be.
I'm just saying, it's like, this is ridiculous. I mean, all our points here are so valid that they're not even registering anywhere. I mean, we have fans on Twitter, to your point, Cowboy fans. We have Packer fans. Everybody that's had some sort of dilemma ending game, you know, winning drive or some sort of issue with it. Is it Dean? Is it the new vice president of referees? Is he the issue ultimately at this point? Because ever since he's taken over for Mike Piera, it seems like everything's gone to crud.
Well, Dean Blandino is, since he is the head of referee, but I just want to keep this in mind, is that he is not behind the rulemaking. The thing is, and we go back to, you know, talking about the Shield, is what they wanted to do is get more audience involved, right? So all of a sudden now they sway all the rules toward the offense. I mean, you even touch these wide receivers going past 5 yards, and technically they can throw a flag. You know, they bend all the rules toward that. And then, you know, of course, with the concussions, and I understand, you know, you have to, you know, the player safety is important, and the players have adjusted. But they bend all of these rules toward getting viewership on most of them, in my opinion. But I don't understand why you had to change the catch rule, you know? But this is before Blandino showed up, and I'm not sure how long Mike Pereira was the head of officiating. But I remember when, you know, as long as you had 2 feet in, it was considered a catch. So I don't understand why they had to change the catch rule. I don't understand why they had to change the possession rule.
The worst thing, Troy, is that nobody can give you an explanation, and I can't find it in the dictionary.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
You can't even find it in the dictionary. Even if you looked in the NFL rule books, I mean, the explanation is almost like it's 2 paragraphs long. It should not. And it's so no wonder referees are making these mistakes. I honestly don't believe a referee could explain that to me, an NFL referee. I honestly believe that.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that they can. I mean, it's become so lawyer-like scripted and lawyer-like explanation that, like I said, it turns into a political, hello, are we invading Iraq or are we not? Well, let's look at the facts. You know what I mean? It's like it's gotten to the point
right, where
it's a politician mentality with the league in terms of an explanation
regarding
a simple catch. It's like I just need a yes or no answer.
Look at it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, do I have both hands on the ball? Are both my feet in?
Do we have troops? Do we have troops?
It's not that hard.
Do we have armament and troops? I'm a soldier. Do we have armament and troops on land right now? Well, that means I'm ready to kick your ass. Yes. But if you don't,
right, then
don't come up with this washy-wash. Well, we're planning on it. The itinerary is being planned as we speak. We have to come on.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
just
get
off.
And on top of that, to speak to Troy's point, what they don't understand is with all of these rules that are so – it's minutiae. That's the word I was looking for earlier.
Yeah.
The game is filled with so much minutiae that you are losing fans because, remember, the fan wants to be able to watch the game and understand what's happening. If you're getting to the point where your referees can't even make a call because they don't understand the rules, then you're going to confuse the average fan. We care. So we pay attention. We actually look at the rules. We review the rules. We pay attention because, one, we care, and two, this is what we do as a profession. We are sports professionals. You know, are we on a Blog Talk Radio? Yes, we are. We may not be on mainstream, but we are still sports professionals, and we pay attention to every single thing that happens to this game. The average fan is not going to do that. And guess what? It is the average fan with a mild affiliation and connection that is spending the majority of the money because they're buying T-shirts. They're buying all these things. But once you lose the fan, you're going to lose a huge source of revenue. You're going to lose a huge source of revenue because you are now putting so much between yourself and your fan base, you're making it difficult for them to be fans. And if all you're doing is creating these magnificent palaces for corporate America to buy suites so they can entertain other rich fat cats, you're going to lose even more. So that's a whole nother rant, is how they are distancing themselves from the everyday average Joe fan, because it's the everyday average Joe fan that came to these games on a Sunday as family entertainment to get away from the minutia of their own lives, not these wonderful corporations that realize that there's a big buck to be made here. That's who puts the money in your pocket. The corporations, they just buy suites. That's my 2-second rant.
Yeah, no, there's no debating that. I'm just saying that's the reality of the business. That's fine. That's a reality. I understand that aspect of it. The only thing I cannot understand is the fact that you have more resources, more avenues to make a good decision, okay, on that. No, but you're running into making this a complicated viewership. In other words, we're sitting there, games are already 3 hours long, and we have to spend an extra 15 minutes and about 7 to 8 commercials just to make a decision whether it's a catch or not. I don't want to watch Papa John 7 times. It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, you did that with the basic fundamental part of the game, catching. And you made it the most cloudy, most difficult thing to decipher. I just don't understand why you did that. I don't get it.
And that right there is going to end this conversation. On top of, I want to say hashtag Fire Fisher is going strong. So I will say, hopefully, it ends up into a result where is a true catch, and we move on to Los Angeles with a new face for the franchise. But, you know, it's just ridiculous the way this was handled, the way it's being handled. You know, it's just – that's what it is. I mean, right now, I think, to Kishi's point, we are losing the grassroots mentality of the sport for high-end, you know, high-end clientele that doesn't really become diehard fan. It's not a diehard fan anymore. The fan base in St. Louis, I can tell you right now, have already thought of the winter vacation and they're going somewhere else because they're not in the stadium. And that's a big issue when you start from there. You look at Minnesota before that. You can start looking at a couple places and other franchises. The reality is, like to Nkishi's point, the reality is going to hit them at some point in the back, and they're going to realize that, you know, that these little intricacies that they're pulling on just the basics of the game are going to affect the bottom line ultimately. So, but congratulations. Yeah, congratulations to the Ottawa Redbacks and the Edmonton Eskimos for moving on to the Grey Cup, 103rd Grey Cup in Canada, because I was watching that. And I certainly was not watching Patriots and Bills last night. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You're getting to a state. I know it was pretty good. I'm just teasing and doing a teaser.
But you're right.
Do I have to go north of the border just to figure out what a catch is now? That's ridiculous. That's what I'm saying. It's ridiculous now. All right, and Kishi, let's go to a brighter and more Romy settings.
Yes.
Romo comes back, and all of a sudden, you know, your streak is ended. And then here you are back in Cloud 9. The division is within grasp. How can this be? That's the question. How can this be? The division just continued to stay in the same level before he left, and now he has an opportunity to, win a division? Oh, my God.
Yeah, because our division stinks. I mean, there's no getting around it. Our division stinks, you know. I mean, the fact that the Skins could come in and beat New Orleans, a Super Bowl championship team, you know, guess it's been a couple of years now, but still, you know, at least within, you know, since 2000. And, you know, and they beat the Saints. And then, what was it, 44-14? And then literally turn around the next week and lose by almost the identical score. That just speaks volumes about how I don't want to say apathetic, but just how average our division is right now. And, yes, I'm excited that Romo is back. I'm leaping for joy. I am jumping for joy. If I ever was corny enough to do a Man Crush Monday, he would be up there every Monday. However, I am still just going to just cautiously ride the wave, let him get back, let him shake off the rust, let him shake off the dust. I mean, it was Miami. You know, now the real test comes back, and I hate that we're going to face Carolina, you know, the second game after he comes back. Like, I wish we could get another soft cookie-cutter team to go up against just to buy him a little more time. You know, well, I don't want to say cookie-cutter because that's not fair to the Dolphins fans. I just wish that we could play another team that wasn't as strong as the Panthers to give him just a little more time to get back in the saddle.
It's okay, because I feel like you feel right now. I feel very happy for Tony Romo, given the fact that he's had some off time and he's actually recovered. But it's going to be nice to have him tested early, I think, because it'll be a true test of his restfulness, if that's the word.
Yeah, but we all know, and you guys are former athletes, and we're all former athletes. You guys are former football players. It's one thing to be in shape. It's a different thing to be in your sports shape, you know. Like, perfect example, in college I was a cheerleader, and, you know, we cheered football and basketball season. In the summertime, I was a lifeguard, so I was swimming all the time. I was constantly, you know, working out. And we all know that swimming is a very strength, you know, an athletic sport. However, once the summer was over, I had 3 weeks in between when the summer was ending and when I had to be back in camp for cheer, and I was hurting. Those, we would have practice. We know, just like the guys had two-a-days, believe it or not, we did too. We would do 2 hours in the morning, take a break for lunch, and we'd come back for 2 hours in the afternoon. I was hurting because even though I was working out in the summer, I wasn't in cheerleading shape. Different muscles, different, you know, requirements. And that's what I'm thinking is going to happen to Tony. He's been resting, but is he in football shape? Troy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't.
Well, with Tony Romo, listen, when he plays in big games, and I know people want to give Tony Romo a lot of grief as far as, like, you know, they're saying he is a choke artist. Listen.
No.
What quarterback has the most fourth quarter comebacks that's currently in the NFL right now? It's Tony Romo.
Tony Romo.
I mean, the guy plays big in big spots. And this is not going to be any different. And what I love about Tony Romo is the guy comes out and he says, "Hey, you might as well go ahead and win them all." You know? So, I mean, he's channeling his inner Major League on that one, man. I don't know if you guys seen that movie. But, yeah, man, I mean, I'm excited to see how he comes out, especially with Carolina coming in. And I differ from you, Keishi. I think this would be the perfect spot for the Cowboys. Now, they're coming in into their stadium on Thanksgiving. It's their day. Everyone knows it's their spot at 4:30 on Thanksgiving. Everybody has their turkey in them, but you can't go to sleep because you know this is the big game that's going to come on. Imagine the confidence boost. And we saw the confidence boost in the Dallas Cowboys last week when Romo was just on the field. It was just a different feel out there. Just watching the team go through and watch the energy that they had out there. And he came out a little bit rusty, and nobody cared because they were like, "It's all right. It's all right. We got Tony back there. It's all right. Let him get through it." And he got through it, and he brought his team to a victory. So just imagine the confidence boost it's going to give his team if they come in and they knock off the 10-0 Carolina Panthers. I think this is a perfect, perfect setup for the Dallas Cowboys. If they are going to make that run, it's to start it right now. And what better way than to beat which is arguably the best team in the NFL right now.
I agree. That's a good point. And they are arguably the best team in the NFL. And I absolutely love what Cam is doing down there in North Carolina because, you know what, and in all honesty, he deserves it because he's earned it. I mean, his first year in the league, they loved him. The second and third year, you know, the media just demolished this poor kid. And I'm using the term kid because that's literally what he was. I mean, I don't even think Cam is 28 years old yet. You know, he was a kid. And now he's finally really settling down into his position. And I think people continue to forget that quarterback is not a position that you just jump out the gate with. And we have to really stop these false expectations of these one-hit overnight wonders. Because if that's all you expect, then that's what you're going to get, you know. And we really have to give the quarterbacks time to mature into their position. And I am really happy for everything that I am seeing out of Cam Newton right now on that football field because now he's exhibiting the leadership that is required to be the quarterback. And kudos to them. But I still want to knock them off on Thursday.
Well, it's a big test. That's why I'm saying this is the perfect time for Romo to come back because – it's an opportunity, like Troy says, it's an opportunity to showcase, you know, an adversary that obviously is going on all wheels and all cylinders. So even to stay competitive with the Panthers, it would kind of give you a real sign of his leadership skills on his return. You had Jason Witten back in the mix when he came back. You had the running game kind of balanced out again because of the confidence that they have with the passing game. They know that, you know, if they get into a crunch mode, he's able to at least make a play or two or get them close to something. And so it was just a big boost for them, which is good. And given the division is still up in the air, I mean, a loss to the Panthers wouldn't necessarily kill them. Their, you know, their division race status, but a win against the Panthers, like Troy says, that would be a huge win against, you know, especially Carolina, which is on a total high right now.
Well, let me just say this, though. Despite the fact that we went seven, you know, losses in a row, the Cowboys were still competitive. And I think that people can continue to forget that. Did we lose seven in a row? Absolutely. But we were no less competitive in those losses.
What I'm saying is that it's that the position at quarterback just got elevated to, like
yeah.
Troy says, to more of a comfort zone where everybody's
true.
More comfortable with of getting a win versus they were
true.
Comfortable that they were going to be close to getting a win. But they didn't go in there to lose, but they didn't have the confidence saying, okay, somebody's going to take us over the top and punch it in for us. And now I think they have that, like you said, with the fourth quarter consistency in his record, you can go into the fourth quarter with this quarterback and say, we have a chance to tie, take it to overtime, or completely win this game. I mean, those are the options. Before, with the backup quarterback, you do have that mindset going, hey, we're going to win, but you're not going to go ride the coattails like you did with your long-tenured quarterback by saying, we have confidence in this person. No, you don't have that much confidence. But, you know, staying competitive is what they did, and that's all they had to do is, you know, and he returns and then gives you a win. And like I said, the division's still in the same status almost as when he left. So it's got that's a plus, I think, in all regards right there. It's a plus. And facing Cam Newton, like to Troy's point, it's a big challenge, yes, but it's a bigger opportunity for them to punch one in and surprise everybody and going, hey, well, this is the better quarterback for us.
Yeah. Well, what I'm wondering, though, and everybody says this, now that we've seen, and Troy can, you know, and you guys and Oscar, you know, your thoughts, now that we see just how good Tony Romo is this when people are going to stop, you know, or is he going to finally be vindicated in terms of how people see him and view Tony Romo?
No. I don't think there's a question of durability there. I think you have to put Tony Romo in my eyes. You have to put Tony Romo just like the Cincinnati Bengals. It's in the same light, right, Troy?
I definitely agree. The with Tony Romo is still going to have that stigma of, I think he kind of shut down some naysayers last year. I think he quieted a few of them, but there are still that group of people out there that says, if he doesn't win a Super Bowl, really, how good is he? And that's basically the goal. In Dallas, that's what they want. They want a Super Bowl. And if he's not going to win a Super Bowl, then, you know, he doesn't get a pass. A lot of people remember a lot of the gaffes that Tony Romo's had in these big games and these win and getting the playoff games and, you know, four straight 8-8 seasons. And he's got all the talent in the world, but he just can't get over the hump. It just seemed like, you know, that stuck with him for the longest time. And it almost took, you know, a referee's gaffe. You know, that they were that far away from, you know, playing Seattle in the playoffs for the championship game last year. And then, you know, to have that bad luck this year, you know, so we may have to wait until next year to see how it is. You know, he may be able to do it this year. But listen, Tony Romo has to win a Super Bowl for the naysayers to be quiet. To me, it's that simple.
Okay. Hey, Kishi. In a football realm, okay, he has a Danny White and a Roger Staubach to live up to. You know what I mean? It's unfair, but in reality, that's the bar. It's like going to San Francisco. It's like going to San Francisco. You know, you have the Montana and Young to live up to. If you don't live up to that, then you're not considered very, very much in anything. So yeah, Super Bowl choice point has to be won in order for him to even have a conversation of what he's done in the regular season, kind of climax in the final, in a big game.
Yeah, I mean, you have some Cowboy fans, and they're not very smart people. They still think Troy Aikman plays right now. You know, it's just Cowboy fans. So, I mean, he still has to live up to Troy Aikman's legacy as well.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So true. True. But
it's too much for him. I mean, he's a very good quarterback.
Romo's a better quarterback than I was. That's still fun.
He's a very good quarterback. You can put him in the same room as Peyton Manning right now, in terms of can he win the big game? Because in Peyton Manning's world, Eli Manning's outside the door with his rings. You know what I mean? And more successful, even though he doesn't have the fanfare. And Tony Romo has fanfare, but he can't seem to get over, you know, the team into a playoff contender and consistently put them in a position to win. That's the difference between I would say a Tom Brady right there. Because as much as you mock Tom Brady, whether it be coaching, whether it be the system, whatever it is, this guy still wins. And you have to respect that, but at the same time, we're not saying Tony Romo's a bad quarterback. He's an excellent regular season quarterback. It's one of those people that you would have on your fantasy squad week in, week out, because he puts points up there. But to say that he's going to take the Cowboys to the promised land, as they would say down in Dallas, it's still not the case.
So true.
All right, so Troy, let's move on to the college swing, and let's talk some NCAA college football. We have Clemson in the college football playoff rankings. We have Clemson, we at 11-0. They beat Wake Forest 33-13, which is a pretty easy win for them, I guess. They're facing, I think, South Carolina next week. You got Alabama still at 10-1. They get by, and they get, I don't even want to, what is it? Charleston Southern?
Charleston Southern.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where is that? I don't know. But anyways, they get a real known, I know that. I'm just joking. they get to face Auburn next week, which is a little bit more competitive team, I guess. Oklahoma, goes and beats 18 TCU 30-29 in a nail burner there. And now they go to face number 11, Oklahoma. So I'm going through the top five here. Iowa, undefeated still. They move up from 5-4. They're they went ahead and beat Purdue 40-20, and then they're supposed to face Nebraska next week. And then we also have Michigan State, 10-1. They move up four slots from, I believe they were at number eight or something. And they're going to face what used to be number three and now is number eight, Ohio State. And so they beat 17-14, I think was the score. Michigan beat Ohio State. So that was very close. And they're going to go face Penn State. And so tell me a little bit about this top five reshuffle, because you have, I think, Ohio State dropped to number eight. You have Oklahoma State dropped, Florida dropped, Stanford moved up, Iowa moves up, and Oklahoma moves up. But the two top dogs, Clemson and Alabama, stay in the same. So give us your little recap of this past week.
Well, Clemson, they won an ACC game. They beat Wake Forest, as you said, 33-13. Wasn't much of a contest for them. Clemson's, they were going to steamroll for the rest of this, you know, they've been steamrolling this whole season. Up next, they have South Carolina, which is their rivalry game. You know, two South Carolina schools, they don't like each other. So, but with Clemson having an ACC schedule finish, they are on their way to the ACC title game against North Carolina. So that's going to be a pretty good game coming up 2 weeks from now. Alabama, cupcake game. This is typical of SEC schools. They usually schedule their out-of-conference games late because they have such great rivalries. And they're going to play Auburn, who is their interstate rival. This is around the time when you're going to start to see all the rivalries, the huge rivalries in college sports. It started early a little bit last week, but now you're really going to see it start to ramp up, and you're just going to really see some old-fashioned hate games. Oklahoma, they have Oklahoma State coming in, who took a tough loss last week to Baylor. They came in with high hopes, Oklahoma State did, and trying to get into the playoffs. And if they would have won that game, then they could have definitely made a great case for themselves. But since with them losing that game, they're pretty much out of contention at this point, but they are playing for a pretty high bowl bid. Iowa, again, they're kind of like Clemson right now. They're steamrolling their way through. Schedule has been you have some people that sit back and say they all had soft schedules. At least with Clemson, they beat Florida State and Notre Dame, so you can't say that much about them. With Iowa, people are questioning their schedule, but if you watch that team play, they play with fundamentals. They play solid football. They play solid defense, and they move the ball on offense, and that's all you can do. So they are already on their way to the Big Ten championship game. It doesn't really matter what happens with Nebraska this weekend, but they are playing for a higher goal, which is to get into the playoffs with them being in the top four. Now, with Michigan State, they just upset Ohio State this weekend. I mean, it was one of those throwback Big Ten football games. I mean, you had bad weather, bad blood. It was rainy, windy. And you had two tough teams out there that had trouble throwing the ball with all those conditions. And it was such an odd game to watch because you were thinking those conditions like that, that, you know, Urban Meyer, who's, you know, typically the smartest guy in the room type of guy, that's the head coach for Ohio State, you know, he gave the ball to Ezekiel Elliott, who was a Heisman hopeful. He gave the ball to him on the first drive eight times. And they went right down the field and they scored a touchdown. But for the rest of that game, Ezekiel Elliott, who's a top-flight running back, Heisman hopeful, probably going to be the first running back picked in the draft, he gave him the ball a total of four times the rest of the game. It was completely just inexplicable. And Mark D'Antonio, who was the coach of Michigan State, he just took advantage of it. I mean, just serious, serious poor game management for, you know, from Ohio State side. And watching that game, it was one of those throwback games. I mean, back when you had, like, Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler, who Bo Schembechler was the coach of Michigan and Woody Hayes was the coach of Ohio State. I mean, these guys were like that 3 yards in a cloud of dust type guys. That's what this game looked like, and it was basically because of the weather conditions. Ohio State had a total of 46 yards passing. Michigan State had a total of 89 yards passing. And to watch these teams struggle like that, Michigan State took advantage of it, and they went down the field in the fourth quarter, kicked the field goal, no time left on the clock. Michigan State's second big upset this year. I mean, this team looks like it's a team of destiny.
Well, and it's going to show well for them. Now, the Notre Dame ranking, they moved down two, but Notre Dame is beat college, I think Boston College by two. Now they're going to face Stanford, number nine Stanford at this point. Do you see that as a crucial swing in the rankings, or how do you see Notre Dame-Stanford at this point for next week?
Well, Notre Dame did drop down two spots, and it's because of the showing against Boston College. Now, Boston College is not they're not a very good football team. Notre Dame was expected to beat them by a much larger margin. But, you know, you got to take into consideration that they did play them at Fenway Park. You know, it was the it was a great game that they played up there, and Boston College was prepared and they were jacked up to play. Now, it doesn't matter if Notre Dame beats Stanford by one or they beat them by 101 this week. I mean, you're playing Stanford. They're a ranked team. They're a very, very great. They're a very, very good football team, and they're going to be prepared to play. So it doesn't matter how much they win or lose by this week. This may actually determine whether or not top four, depending upon how those teams in the top four play.
And Troy, the Harbaugh squad moves up two points this week. So they take care of Penn State this week, and now they're going to face, obviously, Ohio State. Is this the bigger test for Ohio State at this point? Because Michigan seems, even though with the two losses they've had, they seem like they're still a pretty good squad. So is this, you know, back-to-back losses by Ohio State, would that be a detriment to them?
Ohio State losing two straight would be disastrous for that team. Now, you know, Urban Meyer is not going anywhere. He'll be the coach next year. But as far as, like, the psyche of that team, you know, you're talking about, you know, the defending champions from last year. But then again, you also look at it like this. It's Ohio State, Michigan. Now, the past 9 out of 10 games, Ohio State's won this game. But this is Harbaugh's first year back, and he has Michigan back on track as far as looking like one of those blue blood programs, Michigan being the winningest program in Division I. And so now you start to see Michigan actually looking like Michigan. It's very great to see Ohio State, Michigan actually mean something at this time of year. And the past few years, it really hasn't been that. Losing last week, it actually puts Michigan State in the catbird seat as far as getting into the Big Ten championship game. Now, if Michigan State loses to Penn State, then that opens up the door back for Ohio State or Michigan. So whoever wins that game right there can represent the Big Ten in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, and Stanford in the mix, Stanford's probably the only Pac-10 squad left out of the whole, you know, top 10 ranking at this point. And they beat Cal, which is their rival. But now they go to face Notre Dame. So what's going to be this game here for them? I mean, Notre Dame obviously, like you said, you know, almost got beat by Boston College. But do you see them, you know, having a hard time with Stanford, or is it the opposite? Is Stanford going to be having such a hard time with Notre Dame at this point?
Notre Dame going into Stanford, they're going out to Palo Alto to play this game. It's going to be a difficult task. Notre Dame has been kind of up and down this year. And with them, they're having a first-year quarterback, DeShone Kizer, with him being back there. But you got Christian McCaffrey, who was a freshman running back for Stanford. I mean, this guy is Ed McCaffrey's son, who used to play wide receiver for the Denver Broncos. It's been this guy looks like the second coming of Reggie Bush. So Notre Dame is definitely going to have their hands full with that team. And then you also have Kevin Hogan, who's a steady quarterback, yet unspectacular, but he's a steady guy who can lead his team up and down the field. And Stanford also has the number one defense in the Pac-10. So this is a huge test for Notre Dame, and them also going out to Stanford Stadium. I mean, it's going to be huge. It's going to be probably the second biggest test this year for Notre Dame, other than the Clemson game. And it's not going to be the environment of Death Valley and Clemson, but you're going to have some fans that are jacked up to watch Stanford play because they know what's also at stake for Stanford as well, because they still have an outside chance to get into the playoffs.
Really?
Yes.
Absolutely. How does that work? Well, wait a minute. How does Stanford still have a chance to get in? Because the last time I checked, if I remember correctly, weren't they in the bottom half of the top 10?
Yes, they're ranked number 9. They're ranked number 9 right now. But
that's
what happens is you're going to have a lot of shuffling that's going to be amongst this top 10. Okay, you have Oklahoma playing Oklahoma State. You have Iowa who's playing Nebraska, but Iowa also has to play in the Big Ten championship game. Michigan State,
okay.
Ohio State, Michigan State is playing Penn State. And if they win, they can go to the Big Ten championship game. And if they lose, then obviously they'll drop out of the ranking. Michigan and Ohio State, they're playing each other this week. And of course, you have Notre Dame, and Stanford is playing Notre Dame straight up. So this is going to shuffle.
So who are we supposed to be watching? Like when I'm trying to read this and you know, help enlighten not only me, but the rest of the other college football followers who – you know, kind of basic fans like me. Are we looking at the AP poll to determine the rankings? Or are we looking at the coaches? Like, how are they, you know, where's the best place to get the most accurate, up-to-date stats on the rankings?
Well, the best place to go would be ESPN. They have, and they know, they use the coaches poll, and they also use the AP, but what they're basing everything on off of right now is the college football playoff rankings, because that's really what determines who's actually going to be in the playoffs. And I'll give an example. Right now, the AP top five is Clemson, Alabama,
mm-hmm.
Iowa mm-hmm. at number 3, Notre Dame at number 4, and Oklahoma
yep.
at number 5.
Right.
But in the playoff rankings. You have Clemson, Alabama, and they're also in the same spot. But then at number 3, you have Oklahoma there instead of Iowa. And you have Iowa instead of Notre Dame and Michigan State instead of Oklahoma.
Okay, so I must be even looking at the wrong one for that, because when I've been, you know, that's why I've been quiet, because I'm trying to make sure that I'm reading the right and I've been, you know, keeping up with the right polls, because I have when I'm looking at the playoff selection committee polls, I've got Clemson at number 1, Alabama at number 2, but they have number 3, Ohio State, and number 4, Notre Dame. They've got Iowa at 5, Oklahoma State at 6, they have the Florida Gators at number 8, and they've got Stanford at 11. So that's why I was like, wait a minute.
That was last week's. That's last week's rankings. Yeah, you're looking at week 12. This is week 13 now.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
And so, Troy, Baylor in the mix of everybody moved up 3 spots this past week, beating number 6 Oklahoma State by 10 points. They're going to go up against 19 TCU. Is this something that, okay, they're not playing, you know, the rest of the teams that we just talked about are going to be pretty much evenly matched or high-level competition, right? So they're playing – their winning against Oklahoma State was pretty much a big win, because they're beating one of the ranked teams. Now they go into a lower ranking squad like number 19 TCU. What is that going to do for Baylor if they win? Do they move up? They stay the same? I mean, how is that going to change for them?
Well, it'll still be a big win if Baylor can pull this off, and this is why. Trevon Boykin, who is the quarterback for TCU, he's been out of the lineup for the past 2 weeks. Now, what the voters will take into consideration is that TCU would have been a better team with Trevon Boykin play. And also, with TCU, the way they played Oklahoma last week, Oklahoma was up on TCU 30-13 in the fourth quarter. And TCU, they put in their third string quarterback because they had to go back to their third string quarterback, Kohlhausen, and he brought that team all the way back and had to score at 30-29. And what Gary Patterson did, the coach for TCU, is instead of kicking the field goal, the extra point rather, and going into overtime, he decided to go for the 2-point conversion and just go for the win. It was a gutsy call. It wasn't a very smart call, but it was a gutsy call, especially since they had the momentum. I personally would have kicked the extra point because they had the momentum going into overtime, and Oklahoma was on their heels. But everyone knows that TCU can play some football. I mean, they just had some tough luck lately with Trevon Boykin being hurt, and then that tough loss last week to Oklahoma. Now with Baylor. Baylor also, took a tough loss this year, but now they're back up to number 7. Even though they took that loss, they also still have an outside chance. Now they have less of a chance than most of these other teams, because teams like the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the ACC, even they get to play conference championship games, and the Big 12 doesn't have that. So this will be Baylor's and TCU's last game for the season, and at that point it will be up to the voters to decide what their fate will be.
And that right there, to me, is why I don't know. It throws me off because of all that. You know, I consider it politics in a lot of ways, but reality is that's what the system is made with. So really at this point, they're playing basically for a decision to be made later. Is that the case?
That is the case, but it's not totally out of your hands. Honestly, if you think about it like this, it was much worse back in the day. Back in the day, maybe I would say 15 years ago, if you lost the game, your chances of winning the championship were gone. That was it. At least now you have more of a chance. I mean, we can even possibly see a 2-loss team getting into the playoffs. And you know, some people will sit back and say, you know, but at the end of the day, whenever you have these, just like last year, Baylor and TCU felt like they were left out. I'm pretty sure at the end of this regular season here, you're going to have a lot of people that felt like they should be in the playoffs too. So there's always going to be some kind of talking and somebody that feels like that they were given the short end of the stick at the end of these.
But see, let me just throw this out there really quickly. I have to agree with Oscar in terms of it's really hard for me to keep up with it because of what you just said about the whole voting thing. And what I love about March Madness is that it's not about votes. It's about your score. At the end of the day, you move on, score. You either win your conference, and then after you win your conference, the top players from the conference go on to – you know, start making their run, or they go to the NIT. I understand that. That makes logical sense.
Well,
the whole voting thing just keeps blowing my mind. And when you were saying about the bowl, there were so many bowls. How did you know what – I mean, realistically, what's the justification about who's going to play for the conference championship when you've got so many bowls and you just decide, oh, well, this is the championship one. And these are just bowls. So, I mean, the whole thing is just wonky.
Well, I mean, even with the college basketball, you have to fill the 68. It used to be 64, now 68. Even if you don't win your conference, you still have a chance to be voted in. And you still have a committee that's going to vote you into it. So when it comes to college athletics, at least Division I college athletics, when it comes to their championships, you still have to be voted in. You have to either have a committee to select you. In regards to the bowl system, most of the conferences, if not all the conferences, have a deal with the bowls. So, for instance, if your first place team goes to – the first place Big Ten team would go to the Rose Bowl. And the same thing with the Pac-12. So the Pac-12 and Big Ten would always play against each other in the Rose Bowl. The second place team would go to a different bowl. Third place team goes to another bowl. So that's the way they work it out with the bowl systems, but they will take the top 4 teams in the nation and have them pit themselves against in the playoffs. So I mean, it is a lot better than it used to be, but there is going to be a big push.
The big difference is
Yeah, the big difference, I understand it, is Division 2 and Division 3 do not have this system anyway. So if you watch Division 2 and Division 3 ball, it's similar to NFL in terms of, you know, the playoff system. And so, but, you know, there's bigger money in Division 1, so it gets dictated, obviously, with a lot of influence in a lot of ways. So, but it is a way better, like, to your point, Troy, it is a way better system than it was 15 years ago, because now at least you have some sort of, you know, more information. You got a lot more, you know, details. There's a lot more coverage into it. So it is way better than it was. So looking forward to this weekend, obviously Stanford taking on Notre Dame. You got the big games. You got Michigan taking on Ohio State. You got basically Oklahoma State. And so, I mean, it's just some big games going on. You got Florida State taking on Florida as well.
Huge game.
You know, the bottom half of the top 20, or the bottom half of the top 20, still kind of relevant, because you still have Ole Miss against Mississippi State, I believe, this weekend. You got,
yes,
what do we have still? Number, what I said, Florida, right? Florida
yep.
State.
Baylor TCU.
So there's going to be some good games this weekend to recap for next week, and the outcomes are going to really affect the rankings. And to your point, it's really going to affect the who gets in, who gets out. So it's kind of exciting in that way when you put it in a basic sense for a fan. But when you have to do all the homework, it kind of gets more, you know, headaches. You get a lot more headaches. So good thing you're the man and not, we're not, because you obviously you're working. What do they call it? My teacher in college would say you're punching the numbers really quickly on that keyboard. Thank you very much, sir.
Oh yeah, I got it all up in my head, man.
And that's why we have you on.
That's right. All right, so Troy, we're looking forward to college football next week. I mean, it seems like it's building up, it's heating up, and then it's getting toward that end of the month, right? December is the hotbed of college football, and January is the explosion that happens. So it's kind of like March Madness.
I will really get into this come January. Come January, I promise. Once we get into the playoffs, I will be watching all of the games so I can keep up with you. I'm just waiting for that moment.
The best time to do that is this weekend right here, because you're going to get all the rivalry games. And Keisha, you were saying about how with the NFL, you have that kind of corporate crowd. Not in college football, no way. I mean, these fans are going to be going crazy the entire week. It's almost like a homecoming week for some of these fans. So they're going to be
crazy. My timeline is literally going to go crazy with the Stanford Mafia and the Ohio State Buckeyes gang, because, you know, going to grad school in Ohio, that was it. So trust and believe, my timeline is going to literally go crazy this weekend.
I will leave some tissues on your timeline for you. Go blue.
Oh, no. See, I have no, you already know me. I'm not allowed to accept any loyalties to any team unless it is Mississippi Valley State University, Jackson State University. That's it.
All right. So it sounds like we're going to have a great weekend on the NFL as well. And then we obviously, college football is going to be heating up. So football is just, God, it's just a fusion happening. So let's go into the Women's Gridiron Recaps and Notes for this week. Women's Recap and Notes sponsored by No Joke Football Brand at Zazzle.com. You can go shop daily, save up to 50% off during the holiday season. Make sure you check Zazzle.com daily. Use the codes to save. So take advantage of all the codes that are there. You can save up to 50% off on certain select items. We're talking gift cards, T-shirts, holiday gifts, just a lot of stuff at the site. So check it out and use the codes to save some money. And you can also customize our tees and hoodies and all our other stuff on our site at Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. We'll start with the Women's Gridiron Rundown in Australia. Troy, let's go ahead and take us into the Gridiron Queensland. The biggest match this coming week is the final for the Gridiron Queensland Women's Division. So it's going to be Summer Bowl 2015.
So tell us a little bit about what's going to happen this weekend, this Saturday in Queensland.
That's right. We got the Summer Bowl coming up. We're going to be crowning the 2015 champion and the GC Stingrays led by Lauren Evans, one of our No Joke Football supporters. She has her team undefeated right now. So, you know, they went all the way unscathed. You know, I'm pretty sure it was a tough road, but, you know, no one's beaten these guys yet. And the Stingrays have battled all season, and they won pretty easily. The only real challenge has been with the Bayside Ravens. Now, the Ravens played the Rays to the last-minute duel in the two matches in this season. In the first match, it resulted in a 14-14 draw. And in the second matchup, it was an 18-12 Rays victory. Now, the Ravens have had a handful of previous Rays players in Denise Pope, Lucy Jerez, and Sammy Harris. Now, in a battle of the top defenses and key offensive game planning, Ravens quarterback Rachel Dutrebrand has elevated her team to the quick contender in the inaugural season. Now, can the Rays hold off the Ravens in the biggest game of the season, or will the Ravens win it all and complete a historic first season in Queensland?
So you're talking right now, this matchup, I'm going to equate it to what we had a couple weeks ago when we had a big games. You know, like when you put the NFL in perspective, the Giants taking on the Patriots, this is similar to that game. This is going to be that kind of game. They're familiar with each other. They have players last season, because the Bayside Ravens are a new squad. This is the inaugural season for them. But the players on the Ravens ended up migrating over, you know, over there from GC. So you have familiar faces going up against each other. You have a competitive squad on both sides. Like Torio said earlier, a 14-14 tie. That tells you a lot. When you tie in football, and that runs out of, you run out of time, and even in overtime, and it becomes a draw, it's got to leave a bad taste in your mouth, don't you think, Troy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, because you felt like this, you left something on the table. And all you're thinking about after that game is, man, if I would have just made this play here, if I'd have made this play there, I mean, we would have had a different outcome. We could have actually got that win, and that sits with you. So for them to be able to get to do this again, I think both teams are looking forward to this matchup, especially since you have everything on the line going along with it.
Yeah, and the last game, just to give insights, the last game, 18-12, and that was just a last-minute fourth quarter, change. So the Rays, sort of edged the Ravens. The Ravens played a very good game that game. So, you know, to what we talked about before, this is probably the biggest game of this team, this new team, in their first year. Do you think, Troy, this is going to be too much for them to take? They're in the big game in their first year. The Rays have been here before. A year before that, they were the champs, and now they're returning once again to the Summer Bowl. So I think they're more composed, but do you think Bayside's enthusiasm might just win it all in the last game here?
No, I mean, I think you just have to, you know, I think they'll just come out and play loose. They probably feel like they don't have much to lose. With the Stingrays, with them being undefeated right now, you know, they're the favorite team. So you have to come into it thinking, hey, you know, we have nothing to lose. No one thinks we're going to win this game. Why play tight? Let's play loose. Let's have fun. Let's go ahead and go out and win it. Because, you know, if you go out and you play nervous, most of the time you're going to. So I think they're going to come out loose. I think they'll come out and just start flying around and just make it. Because if you think about it, it's still just football at the end of the day. You have to play your game.
Yeah, and it's been close games. So 14-14 and 18-12, that sounds to me like a very defensive, aggressive style of football on both sides of the ball. Not to take away from the offense. But defensively, it sounds to me like, yeah.
And not to mention, they know they can play with them. You know, they haven't beaten them, you know, badly by any stretch. I mean, both of these games, I mean, you know, they tied one and then lost the other one by 6 points. So they know they can play with them. you know, they're not afraid of, you know.
It's going to be exciting, and it's going to be streamed also. You can get the stream on there. Just follow at DC Stingrays. You can follow Gold Coast Stingrays on Facebook. And as soon as we get the link to the game, we will go ahead and put it on Twitter and Facebook. So let's continue on, Troy, in Queensland.
Congrats to Christy Moran and the Logan City Jets and all the players in the league who received their team awards and their league trophies this weekend. And Christy, she was the overall MVP for the 2015 season. So once again, congratulations to Christy Moran of Logan City Jets. And you can follow
Christy actually had the wrist fracture that we talked about last week. So I guess that's very good for her. But she's recovering very well. So just wanted to add that. So, Troy, we can follow the Stingrays at?
You can follow the Stingrays at the GC Stingrays, Gridiron QLD, and also at Women's Gridiron for three Summer Bowl link stream and results.
All right. Mikishi, let's go to Ladies Gridiron. What's going to happen this weekend? It's going to be pretty exciting. Game three this coming weekend.
Well, I would be able to tell you if I were not in the middle of a technical difficulty. Because
all right, so Troy, you
want to
take it over?
Sure. The Ladies Gridiron League game number three. That was the Brisbane Blaze versus the Canberra Mustangs in Canberra. The LGL matchup featured the debut of the Canberra Mustangs. Now the Mustangs at home will look the surprise in their inaugural outing. Now, while the Blaze looked improved to 1-1 on the road, the Blaze lost in Adelaide 48-8 versus Lisa Fife and Company. Now, you can follow the LGL End Zone as they will post the regular updates on the game so you won't miss out on the action. And the videos, photos, frequent score updates will make you feel as if you were watching the game in Canberra, so you seriously don't want to miss out on this following page.
And it's going to be this weekend, November 28th. It's in Canberra. You're looking at two squads here. One is a brand-new squad, which just started this. Unfortunately, the schedule has been shifted. So on a sidebar note, the schedule was shifted. The Melbourne Maidens are no longer in the LGL for this season. They have been disbanded because of internal things that happened within the league. So the LGL has decided to revamp the schedule. So the revamp schedule should come out soon, within the next week or so. But game three goes on. Brisbane was a historic first game against Adelaide, and everybody saw that. You can go on our Facebook page as well and kind of view it in this video. The first game, game one, Brisbane versus Adelaide, is going to be on December, in December, early December, the game one matchup. And then on the 13th, you'll have game two, which was the game against the West Coast Angels. So you can get tickets at ticketmaster.com.au, and you can follow LGL at ladiesgridiron.com. All right.
Okay,
so
guys, I'm back up.
Gridiron,
I'm back
South
up.
Wales,
thanks.
Then?
I sure do.
Right.
This weekend, the top squads in New South Wales will collide. The undefeated Raiders, led by our no-joke supporter, Stacey Spears, along with former LFL standout Sherry Only, will face their rivals, the Gators. The UTS team is seeking to stay in the playoff race as the number two seed, and the Opal Bowl pre-match will be held this weekend, November the 28th. Will the Gators be fueled to upset the Raiders? Got to tune in and watch. For more information about that, you can follow at Gridiron New South Wales on Twitter, at Gridiron NSW. And again, you can follow them on Twitter at GridironNSW, or you can visit GridironNSW.com for match results and the schedule.
All right.
And
so
we'll go to
LFL US news now.
Okay, great. And in the LFL news, the LFL announces that LFLShop.com will reopen in January in 2006. The LFL stars Monique Gaxiola and former LFL stars Chloe Butler and Sherry Only are now part of the Girl Clothing Group, and along with current UFC champion Holly Holm. So check out the video on our Facebook page and use the MOGAX, that's capital M-O, capital G-A-X, to save 10% any item. That's a crazy awesome pairing. Way to go,
yeah,
Holly Holm, capitalizing.
Pretty intense. It's a brand new brand, so everybody's kind of excited.
Oh, yeah, and it was smart to partner with Holly Holm to go on ahead and get, you know, make that capital and build off of the momentum that she's got going on right now. So moving to Guatemala. In Guatemala on December the 4th, the LFL All-Fantasy Tour event will feature the major stars, including MVP Danica Brace to Michelle Angel and more. For more information, follow them on Twitter at LFLGUATE. Again, follow them on Twitter at LFLGUATE for more event details. And Oxygen's last episode airs tonight as the Bliss lose in the Showcase Center. So again, follow Whip Clip for a cool video clip of the show. And Oscar, do you have the WFA news?
Yes, we do. So WFA news, the Women's Football Alliance tryouts are still going on all the way up to February 2016 because the season starts in spring of 2016, so April through August. So if you want to be involved with women's tackle football and you want to be part of a team in your region, you can go to the WFAfootball.com site. You can follow on Twitter at WFAfootball. You can follow the Independent Women's Football League at IWFL. You can also go to IWFLsports.com. And in Canada, they're also having the tryouts. And you can follow the Western Women's Canadian Football League at WWCFL and the Maritime at the Maritime Women's Football League at MWFL Football. So if you want to join a squad, this is the perfect time of the year. Take a look at it. You can also contact and invoice every team that the league has. So if you go to the official league websites, they will guide you through and who to get a hold of in your local zip code or your region. Sometimes you might have to travel just to play the passionate sport of women's gridiron. Some people do make that sacrifice, and they love it. Other people just prefer to be more cozy. So look at see, there's a lot of teams. Over 60 teams in one league, and I believe over 45 in another, including the 9 teams in Canada plus the 4 teams in Maritime. So a lot of opportunity there. So you can get the off-season scoop in the WFA and the IWFL by following @backseatcoach on Twitter. And you can go with neilrosendahl.com as well for all the changes and looking towards 2016 campaign. So you go to www.neilrosendahl.com. Give a shout-out to Sammy Grassoffi. She's been doing the music swing, and she's doing all her stuff outside of football. So for helping the homeless community in her area, over in that area, she raised money with a concert. It was a cold environment, but you can check out the coverage by Windy City News on our Facebook page and Twitter timeline, or you can visit sammygrassoffi.com to see what's going on in her world. So shout out to her for helping out, especially in this time of the year during the winter season. I want to give a shout out to Christy Moore on her journey in the high school playoffs with the Padres boys team. She's been following us this past week, and we want to give her a shout out. She's a kicker on the Padres boys team, and they're going to the state finals this coming weekend. She was featured also on USA Today HighSchoolSports.com site. So that was pretty exciting. We go to Mexico now. The Liga football, the Bikini Cancun. Week one featured the top two franchise teams winning double digits in the newly campaign. Barracudas won over Poison. The Nereas also versus Viral. SOA taking care of the Sharks. So you can follow at Twitter, LFB Oficial for updates and hashtag MeLigaFB. The Caribbean Football League is also underway in the full swing, so you can follow the updates there as we kind of keep you up to date week to week on those. Caribbean Football League and the LFBC are obviously non-full kit leagues. PGFL updates also on our page, so you can also follow at PGFL Oficial on Twitter, or you can follow PGFL Real Time on Facebook. So for the latest happenings on the women's scene, follow us at Gridiron Beauty and our Facebook page. Don't forget to go like us on Instagram, where we have a great following there, and we appreciate everybody sending in their stuff so we can display the best women athletics playing women's gridiron internationally and globally. So we appreciate for the following. We also have a contest going on through December 15th on our Twitter handle. So you can retweet and follow us through December 15th. We will choose one winner for a No Joke Football tee. So one winner will get that, retweet and follow often, and then we will put it in the drawing, and one person will get a No Joke Football go to.
And they are awesome.
Go ahead and do that. They are awesome.
I know.
So,
I know. I wish I could win mine.
You'll get yours. Don't worry. I will get yours.
I know.
Soon.
I can't
not a problem.
Wait.
But
and I
go
will
to
proudly
the
show
Twitter
it
handle
off.
And make sure you tweet and retweet and follow us. So it'll be great. Troy and Cece, so far so good. We got a couple minutes here. So we talked about some of the hot buttons going on with concussions and everything else. We dived into, you know, a lot of the NFL. The Patriots, you think, Troy and Keisha, I'll throw it out there before we go. I know Erica Lynn Anderson would be happy for us to do that too. And are they the top AFC squad right now? I mean, they look unbeatable at this point. Troy?
They're not unbeatable.
Go ahead, Troy.
I'm sorry.
I think right now they're obviously the best team in the AFC. And that's despite, to me, what makes this so amazing is how many injuries this team has sustained, especially along the offensive line. And I'm watching, you know, when they beat up on my, you know, my beloved Redskins, they actually put in a tight end playing right tackle, and this guy didn't give up a sack. They've only had one starting offensive lineman that play all the games this season. And they've had various wide receivers go down. But, you know, the consistent, you know, the constant that they have there, Belichick and Brady. When you have those two back there, I mean, the sky's the limit with this team. So just to watch them go through all the injuries. And, Edelman that just went down, they're not going to get him back until maybe the playoff start. And that was their biggest weapon, and they're still just chugging along and making plays, and they're doing what they have to do to win. So, yeah, they're obviously the best team for me in the AFC.
So Troy, I'm going to throw out what my coach in high school would say. No excuses, people. Everybody needs to step up. And I guess that's the mantra in New England.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you also hear this one. There's no excuses, no explanations. Just get it done.
That's right. Right. And Kishi?
Well, the other hot topic issue I wanted to throw out there really quickly was Johnny Manziel getting benched. No disrespect, Troy, but he pulled almost a Robert Griffin and going from the starter to the third string. I mean, that to me is an anomaly. That's something I'm not used to seeing in the NFL in terms of how quickly and how fast coaches are just benching the starters. I mean, once upon a time, the starter was like gold almost and untouchable. And now it's like hard to hold on to them. So I found that to be a really interesting situation going on for Cleveland in terms of Manziel getting benched again, because that one was absolutely a head scratcher. And then the other question is, does Chip Kelly stay in Philly next year? Because I honestly can't see how the Eagles justify keeping him around.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Go ahead, Troy.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was going to address both of those, actually. Number one, one thing I would like to do with the, in regards to the Johnny Manziel situation, I would like to give Mike Pettine, the Cleveland Browns coach, a lot of credit, because what he did was is he held him accountable for his actions.
Yep.
Now, was he caught drinking? No. But what he said was, he said, I promise, coach, I won't embarrass you, and this is embarrassing. It's just unnecessary for him to do that. And this guy has shown that he doesn't have enough self-control. And then you see, in my opinion, he should be given that same lesson to Jerry Jones, where you have Greg Hardy who is basically striking a coach and slapping playbooks out of people's hands, and he gets nothing. You know, not even a slap on the wrist, not even a fine. So I got to give a shout-out
to
Mike Pettine.
Yeah, that was humiliating.
In regards to Chip Kelly, I don't think they're going to fire Chip Kelly. And the reason why I say that is because, listen, you gave this guy complete control of your operation. You got rid of the GM. He wanted to, you know, make all the calls as far as personnel, as far as coaching staffs. You gave him those controls. Now, Jeffrey Luria, he's looking at it like, obviously, he's disappointed. But is he going to pull the trigger this quick, especially saying how Chip Kelly had success in his first two seasons, winning 10 wins both times? Are you really going to pull the trigger on this guy after one season? You still have to give Chip Kelly a little bit of time to implement his people and get his guys in there and to get his system the right way he wants it to. It doesn't look good right now, but I don't think they'll fire Chip Kelly.
I agree. They won't fire him. Too much investment in there yet. He would have to be at the bottom of the cellar in the horrible division that the NFC is, you know, the East. Until then, I don't think he's going to get fired. Manziel, to me, is immaturity, but at the same time, I think the NFL Players Association needs to take responsibility for some of the immaturity on these players. And if they would fine these players on top of the franchises and the league taking action, none of these players would think twice about what their job really is. But since they can get away with the Players Association is going to go somehow defend me, or my agent's going to stand up for me, sometimes they think that that's a loophole that they can just get away with. But, you know, applaud the coaches, the ones that do, like Troy says, applaud some of the coaches that do say, hey, we're pulling the plug on you. You're worthless to us. You're embarrassing. You're not going to wear the, our fan base is not going to be embarrassed like this. You know what I'm saying? So I think you have to applaud them. On the Greg Hardy thing.
The Island of Misfit Toys.
On the Greg Hardy thing, I think it's – yeah, exactly. But on Greg Hardy, I think it's just a matter of, you know, making the right decision. You know what I mean? It's just the behavior. I mean, I was tweeted a lot when that happened. A lot of the women felt like that was a slap in the face to the NFL fan base, which is probably 90% female.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take into consideration domestic violence and you just think of it as no big deal, we're just going to deal with it. If something in society is extreme, and I mean abuse, child molesting, whatever you want to call it, okay, if you put, Adrian Peterson out for a year, I mean, you need to set the bar by saying anything that is proven outside of court that you are, you know, acquitted of or put in position to be reprimanded, you are out for a year as a standard, or you're out of the league. And then I bet you some of these players would wake up real quick, and their agents would wake them up real quick, because both of them would lose in the end.
Exactly.
That's a lot to lose.
And that's what it
a
is.
A lot to lose.
That's what's got to be.
Yeah, you go from making – you go from making $200,000 on a practice squad to go back and make a $10 an hour job, you'll get a reality check real quick.
You can only hope. Well,
yeah,
I want to do something non-football really quickly, because this is an amazing feat.
Sure.
I want to give a shout out to Northern High School ladies volleyball team. The ladies of Northern High School in Calvert County went undefeated this season all the way to the state championship. So congratulations to the Northern High School ladies volleyball team. I know that we cover, you know, ladies football, and I know that volleyball is not football. However, from one female sport to another, that's an amazing feat, and I just want to congratulate those young ladies.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, we try to follow women's sports everywhere on Twitter. I mean, I follow the Women's Hockey League as well. We follow rugby. We follow, you know, anything with women-related sports. We have a great network fan base with Women's Sportsnet. We follow a lot of the women's Twitter handles. So, we want to applaud accomplishments wherever we can. So congratulations to them for an amazing season.
And that is my pre-Thanksgiving plug.
Perfect. Well, I can tell you guys, we're going to have a great Thanksgiving this weekend. I hope everybody has great meals and looking forward to Thanksgiving Day, especially with NFL going on there. And then college football this weekend is going to be a huge,
you know, huge melee there. So we are looking forward to it. And then obviously we can't forget the Summer Bowl in Australia, which is going to be huge, the final there in Australia. So reminder, everybody, go to ultimatesportstalk.com and get all the latest scores with major sports like WWE, MMA, and NFL, and NBA, and everything else major sports. So follow ultimatesportstalk.com. You can find our blog there. If you don't know where it's at, you can go on our Twitter handle, and we will tweet the link there as well to ultimatesportstalk.com. So that's going to really do it for us today. We want to thank our network partners, Zazzle.com, first and foremost, Block Talk Radio, for giving us the platform. We can want to thank GIQuindom.com for keeping up with the best of stories for talented young ladies playing women's gridiron and high school football. So if you want to be featured, do a feature, or you want your daughter to be featured, and she's doing amazing things in high school or in college, give us a shout out and go to GIQuindom.com, or you can go to at GIQuindom on Twitter, and you can direct message there as well. You can follow at Backseat Coach for the latest updates on the Women's Football Alliance, the Independent Women's Football League, and everything else women's gridiron in terms of weekly updates on tryouts and news and notes. You can follow at Women's Gridiron for Australia news and notes on the full kit leagues. You can follow at JazzLaw46 for the latest news on the FX Mexico and AFFE scene. And for the latest, of course, you need to follow us Kishi's Cuties at Troy Wilson_1 and at Gridiron Beauty as well. So, and you can go to Facebook anytime. They're weekly at Gridiron Beauty on Facebook. We want to just go ahead and let you know college football is a hotbed. I know we got our man here, Troy, but you can also go to gridirongirl.org and you can follow the college scene right there as well. And if you ever get into, you know, a little heated rant mood, you can always follow at Pat Van Goltrell, and she'll join you for that because she's pretty good at that stuff. So, and Fit for Life, we can't forget Eric as well for all updates on NFL talk. So join the crowd, join us on Twitter. We have a great time together. And any last notes here, Troy, before we leave? I'll give the floor to you guys. So, Troy, anything else before we go?
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start doing the preparation for my turkey right now. That's right, man. I'm stuffing mine with citrus and onions and herbs, and I can't wait for the smells to start walking through the house. And I'll be finished everything right before the Lions game comes on. It's just tradition for me. I'm a big eater. I cannot wait. I cannot wait for Thursday.
I will be knocking on your door.
You're right. Closer than I am, baby. So, yeah, I'm jealous.
Yes. I will hop in the car.
I cook big. I don't even mess around with it, man. My whole house is gonna be just nothing but pots and pans and plates. That's all I'm gonna have, man.
Troy, you're the same guy that I met in St. Louis when I went to the Rams game a couple years ago on the same field around Thanksgiving time, and I went into the restaurant and I asked the waiter for a salad and some turkey, and the guy turns around and said, "A salad? Are you kidding me?" And I'm like, "Whoa, boy, hold on." That was his attitude.
Right.
I know he was big. It's meat or nothing, boy. Salad.
That's right.
You go eat grass. All right.
Salad,
so, Kishi, what are you going to do this weekend?
Spending time with the family, getting some community service time in. I will be assisting the homeless shelter in Calvert County for their annual turkey trot. No, I am not trotting. I am not running. However, I will be assisting. So I'll be up early at the crack of dawn helping out with the turkey trot to raise money on behalf of the homeless shelter. And, of course, what better day to do it than a day of Thanksgiving. And I will be thankful for the ability to go home and go into a nice warm building and be able to eat a good meal. And the rest of the day will be spent with my family. So I'm excited. And, of course, football.
Yeah, and, of course, football. Yeah, we're going to have a little bit of family time here as well in Cali, and my parents. I'll go probably visit my parents as well. So it's kind of like a nice high warming, and then you can catch the game pretty much anywhere at this point. So my parents are not big football fans, but it's best to spend time there. But I know we're big football fans here, so it works out really well. So I hope everything works out good.
We're looking forward to family time this weekend, as well as a big bowl games coming up with big matchups. And like I said, the Aussie playoff final as well. And we also have Thanksgiving Day NFL. So I can't even go out and play ball anymore because I'm so old. I used to be able to play ball on Thursday. You know what I mean? But now it's kind of like hamstrings and aches. I'd rather just watch from the sidelines. But we'll let the young ones do that and keep the tradition alive. So
very nice.
So you guys, looking forward to it. We'll see you guys next week, same time, Tuesday, and we'll see what the NFL does. And then I'm looking forward to college football results. So that's really
I'm looking forward to college football this weekend. You got me excited this weekend, Troy.
Troy's got us excited this week. Yeah, it's kind of like doggy-dog fight. So I'm looking forward to the results and see what the polls are going to be. All right, have a great weekend, everybody. Safe travels.
Have a great weekend.
We'll see you guys here next week. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye, everybody.